Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. My name is Boris Hossain. I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's Viewpoints, tiny homes could help solve the housing crisis on Cortes Island, but regulations keep getting in the way.
It's a discussion I think that the community has to have on how to make that happen and where to allow that to happen.
More than half the people in Canada are struggling and feeling the inflation crush, according to a recent survey. A local food bank in Ontario managing to keep its head over the water. High cost of living and staff shortages are also hurting Halifax businesses. The Oysterhead Tavern will stay closed for quite a while.
We just can't hire anyone. There's just such an unbelievable labor shortage. This time last year, I think we had 18 employees. Now we're down to one.
A Dalhousie University student gets $50,000 for his innovation and will represent Canada at the 2023 Global Student Entrepreneur Awards.
For me, it's an opportunity to inspire others to take a step into the unknown and really try to do the things that maybe are a little bit frightening at first, so that you can really make a difference in the world.
And Canadians don't need to worry about abortion laws being repealed, but vigilance is needed to secure abortion rights. Ed Halverson with that story.
The statutes around abortion in Canada are that abortion is illegal or outside the purview of the law, so we don't have to worry about one specific decision being overturned.
Happy to have you with us.
Hi, this is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You're tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
As Cortes Island wrestles with demand for affordable housing, the creation of a tiny home park is being considered as one short-term solution for the small island off the BC coast. Sandra Wood, Executive Director for the Cortes Community Housing Society, says the creation of a tiny home park located at Manson's Landing Rainbow Ridge property was something the society looked into in detail. However, tiny homes are not in the works just yet. Cortes Island first needs an official community plan to allow for increased density as a first step for creating a tiny home park. The society will instead create 24 affordable townhouses as its main initiative. But the future owners will have to wait 2 years until any of the units are built and available. More with Greg Osoba, who spoke with Sandra Wood.
As Cortes Island looks for ways to address the need for affordable housing, creation of a tiny home park is gathering momentum. People are building the structures, but where they can be placed is challenging, according to Cortes Community Housing Society Executive Director Sandra Wood. The society is in the process of building 24 affordable townhomes on its Rainbow Ridge property in Manson's Landing, and Wood says they looked into creating a tiny home park as well, but that would involve changing density regulations under the local official community plan.
We didn't at the time feel like we wanted to take on the revision of the official community plan to incorporate tiny homes. We just felt that was more complicated. And we still feel that is a piece of work that needs to be done, not necessarily by the housing society, but it could be done by a group of like-minded tiny home owners who have a plan or a concept of making a tiny home park. And that could be done on a portion of the Rainbow Ridge land, or it could be done on another piece of property on Cortes. But it's a discussion I think that the community has to have on how to make that happen and where to allow that to happen.
Aside from revising the official community plan, Wood says there are many additional considerations.
On top of that, there are a number of technical issues that need to be resolved or decided on, or standards need to be put into place so that it can be done in a attractive, affordable way. And so that was the issue that the housing society ran into, is when we looked at potentially creating a tiny home park, we realized in the case of the housing society taking that project on, it means we would have to subdivide a portion of Rainbow Ridge off maybe a 5 or 6 acre parcel off of the 51 acres so that we could keep whatever debt or any mortgage or any encumbrances would be just associated with that smaller parcel and not affect the rest of the land. And then as soon as you do a subdivision, then the Ministry of Transportation is involved with approving your neighborhood plan. And that includes approving everything from the road design, the road access to that property. And in our case, for example, if we were trying to do it on the south end of the Rainbow Ridge property, that would be close to the cemetery road access. It looked like, when we investigated it, it would mean that we would have to improve the quality and the width of Cemetery Road, and we, the Housing Society, would bear the cost of all those roadworks, including the new road that would go into the tiny home park in this conversation. And then in addition to that, obviously, if you're going to be hooking up 20 or more tiny homes, that means a major septic system that can take the wastewater and the sewage from all those tiny homes, or at the very least, build a like a laundromat and a public washroom as far as offering showers and toilets to the residents of that tiny home park, and that would need to be hooked up to a proper wastewater system. And of course, you've got water and bringing in power to each of the sites where a tiny home would be allowed to be positioned.
Yeah.
So suddenly you have a huge infrastructure cost to make that happen. And really what you're building is a modern day mobile home park.
Wood says there's nothing stopping a private investor who has sufficient property and resources creating a tiny home park. But the devil is in the details.
You are allowed to have outbuildings on your property, and you are allowed to have movable structures on your property. So in theory, you can have tiny homes or sleeping cabins or those kinds of guest accommodations. But there comes a point, and I don't know what that point is off the top of my head, as far as when does a tiny home get deemed to be a dwelling? And when does it count as the cottage on your property? And I think those are the things that the Strathcona Regional District and the community of Cortez have to help define those rules.
Wood adds that the Cortez Community Housing Society welcomes creative proposals for further cooperative or co-housing initiatives on the Rainbow Ridge property in Manson's Landing. Greg Osoba, Cortez Island.
Nine, Kingston, Ontario. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
A new Angus Reid survey suggests that more than half the people in Canada are struggling and stressing over the high cost of living, including food increases. 52% of those surveyed say they couldn't even manage a sudden expense of more than $1,000. The Six Nations Food Bank has been feeling this impact on its charitable donations. The organization is feeling the crunch and needs volunteers. Six Nations Food Bank coordinator Tracy Martin says they have seen a 50 to 20% increase in families requiring food bank services in the last 6 months. Martin adds that during the week of August 15 to 19, 2022, they served 520 families. David Moses is in Nashwaukin, Ontario. He spoke with Food Bank Chair Mary Montour.
Scano, Sego, Sigoli, Ani. I'm David Moses. A new survey suggests that more than half of the people in Canada are struggling and stressing over the high cost of living, including food increases, which is trickling down into charitable donations. Six Nations Food Bank coordinator Tracy Martin says in the last 6 months, they have seen a 15 to 20% increase in families requiring food bank services. Martin says during the last week of August 15th to 19th, they serviced 520 families. Ironically, they can throw out as much as 40 to 60% in expired food each week, which is why they prefer to have monetary donations to purchase what they need in bulk and make the money go further. But that's only part of the stress being felt by the food bank. Six Nations Food Bank Board Chair Mary Montour says it's important for people to understand that as a single-staffed operation, they have limited resources to help distribute the food as well.
We have one employee, which is Tracy, but we look and depend heavily on volunteers. And finding volunteers is very hard.
Right.
So, or to find volunteers that will commit to coming, say, on a weekly basis or even coming to assist is very hard. We are posting now on Facebook, and we had one volunteer come in today, but otherwise, it's Tracy that's doing all the work. And I don't think that how people realize that a one employee run business with the food bank board backing her up. But in order to do and hand out everything that we do on Thursday, which is our food service day, she's got to coordinate all that.
The Angus Reid Institute is reporting that many Canadians are responding to price increases with spending decreases, and 4 in 5 saying they have cut spending in recent months by either trimming their discretionary budget, delaying a major purchase, driving less, scaling back travel, and charitable donations.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
The recent repeal of the Roe v. Wade decision by the United States Supreme Court shocked the entire world. The decision had, until now, protected the right to an abortion. Governments, women rights groups, ordinary citizens, and medical authorities in many countries opposed the decision. Some Canadians worry that the same could happen here. While vigilance is needed, a doctor in Halifax, Nova Scotia, feels that Canadians don't need to worry about abortion laws being repealed. Dr. Robin McQuarrie says that's because there is no law that governs abortion in Canada, so none can be overturned. However, inequality of access needs to be addressed. More on this with Ed Halverson in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
A South Shore doctor says Canadians don't need to worry about abortion laws being repealed, but must remain vigilant. Dr. Robin McQuarrie, an obstetrician and gynecologist at South Shore Women's Health, is referring to the recent repeal of the Roe v. Wade decision made by the United States Supreme Court. McQuarrie is also an associate professor at Dalhousie University, where she instructs future doctors on abortion laws in Canada. She says there are many differences between the United States and Canada regarding abortion, starting with the fact there is no one law that governs abortion in Canada, so none can be overturned.
The statutes around abortion in Canada are that abortion is illegal or outside of the purview of the law. So we don't have to worry about one specific decision being overturned because, in fact, the decision was to say this isn't something that should be governed by Canadian law. It's not a legal issue. It's a health decision. It's not a legal issue.
McQuarrie points out another misconception held by some Canadians is that there is a time limit on when an abortion may be performed. She says a fetus is not considered a baby or person under the law.
Personhood in Canada is governed by federal statutes, and personhood is not conveyed until a person has drawn their first breath and is alive.
McQuarrie says she performs abortions up to 12 weeks because that's what her training and equipment permit. She has heard anti-abortionists use late-term abortions as an argument against the practice, but says in fact they are quite rare.
They're very, very uncommon. They're typically the hardest decision that person's ever had to make in their life.
While readily available in Halifax, once going beyond the 4 regional hospitals that are within an hour of the city, access to abortion falls off drastically in Nova Scotia. A person with a uterus on either end of the province would need to travel several hours to Halifax to undergo a medical or surgical abortion. And McQuarrie says that inequality to access needs to be addressed.
We still have a disparate accessibility depending on where people are located geographically. And typically what comes along with geographical isolation is differences in income, differences in access to services. So it's really important that it be argued meaningful access is probably not fair across the province.
Macquarie says even though there may be no one law that can be repealed in Canada, there are still other ways access to abortion can be limited. She says the many people who warned the new appointees to the U.S. Supreme Court would overturn the Roe v. Wade decision were laughed off and told it would never happen, and that can't be permitted to occur in Canada.
I often think people don't have a good sense of what gaslighting is, but that's truly what happened when people were rightfully protesting, saying we're worried we're going to lose this long protected statute in the U.S. And so, you know, all the people that poo-pooed them and said, don't be silly, you know, you're really being dramatic. Well, in fact, that is in fact what came to pass. And so I encourage people to pay attention.
I'm Ed Halverson.
Stay in Nova Scotia, where Dalhousie, a student, will be representing Canada at the Global Student Entrepreneur Awards with his new innovation, the Breezy Chamber. David Hoxson is a trained mechanical engineer who started medical school about 3 years ago, and in 2021, he founded the startup Hollow Medical with Dalhousie engineering graduate Sarah Fedulo, and build a close-knit team of about 5 or 6 people, and their Breezy Chamber put them in the spotlight by the GSEA judges, who awarded them $50,000 for their innovation. The Breezy Chamber is predominantly used for the two most common chronic respiratory illnesses, asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary diseases. The Breezy Chamber is set to be out in the market late next year. Sarah Gouda had a chat with David Hoxson.
So can you tell us why you'll be representing Canada at the awards and what this all means?
I'm a mechanical engineer by training, and I actually started medical school about 3 years ago. And the motivation for that was really to learn about some of the more complex problems that face, you know, people living in our world. And about a year and a half ago, I came across a problem relating to inhalers and just a means for people around the world to better obtain the medication from their inhalers, and essentially embarked down this path of creating a business, going through numerous accelerators here in Atlantic Canada, and really was reached out to by the Global Student Entrepreneur Awards to participate in the national competition this year, and didn't really think I had a huge chance of winning. And it turns out that I won the whole thing, which was, I think, probably the biggest external validation we've had for the problem that we're trying to solve here. So really, what it means is that we're working on something that's meaningful, which was the intent from the beginning. So for me, it's an opportunity to hopefully inspire others to, you know, take a step into the unknown and really try to do the things that maybe are a little bit frightening at first, so that you can really make a difference in the world.
So tell us a little bit about what got you this award. Is it Hollow Medical?
It is Hollow Medical. Yeah, so basically, so I kind of alluded to it a little bit, but I don't know how familiar you are with inhalers, but you know, the conventional pressurized inhaler is that sort of L-shaped device, but it's actually recommended for all people that to effectively get the medication where it's needed in the lungs, that a large holding chamber is used. And it's basically kind of a water bottle shaped device that captures the expelled dose from the inhaler and just gives you more control and ability to actually get the dose where it's needed. Unfortunately, these devices are known to, you know, be associated with stigma and low compliance. So the people that could actually be benefiting from them don't actually use them. So our goal was really to take this device that wasn't really made for practical everyday life and reinvent it so that we can essentially, you know, reduce the burden of respiratory illness on people that rely on these devices.
And can you tell us a little bit about your cash prize and what are your intentions?
One of the most exciting moments was just getting one of those novelty checks that I can put on the wall. That was a pretty big realization of the success that we've had so far. And I think that's something that I'll keep on the wall for some time to come. But in reality, I suppose the value of that prize is much more than that. Really, it's going to go right into a lot of the development work that we have that lies ahead to basically bringing this device to market.
Is it going to be affordable? Do you have a name for it?
It's intended to be in keeping with the currently priced devices on the market, though we're adding a few nuances that we hope will basically, again, reduce the burden of care with these devices. And right now, the proposed name is Breezy Chamber.
You're an entrepreneur. Would you have any advice for students who are looking to, you know, build something like you did, but perhaps they're scared or they don't have the right knowledge of how to go about it?
I would say when I look back to where I started versus where I am now, I think the main difference is at the beginning, I was the main barrier to anything. You know, I would get wrapped up in my thoughts thinking, oh, should I even bother? You know, whether or not it's going to succeed. If you don't start to open doors, you'll never know. And I think after a certain period of time, once I stopped being the barrier to myself, I realized there's a whole world of opportunity out there and there's so much support in this space. So what I would say is if you have an idea, if you feel inspired, don't let that fade away. Try to reach out to someone who might be able to help you take the next step, because it might only be one step in the right direction that really opens the door. So don't prevent yourself from taking it.
Hi, I'm Sarah Gouda in Halifax, Nova Scotia. You are tuned to Viewpoints.
Some businesses are striving while others are having a real hard time. It's a case in New Brunswick where the Oysterhead Tavern, formerly known as the Moot Point Tavern and the Black Duck Cafe, is now closed and will probably stay closed for quite a while. Co-owner Al Barber says he and his partner Sarah Evans are continuing to operate the Black Duck Bakery next door. We've come to the point now where we just can't hire anyone, they say. In addition to issues finding people to work in the cafe and tavern businesses, Barber says they have been other problems snowballing and compounding each other. He cites the ongoing pandemic, high rates of inflation, and supply chain issues. Barber says the whole industry is hurting and he suggests ramping up support for local businesses as soon as possible. Most people are just scraping by, says Barber. In Sackville, New Brunswick, here's Erica Butler.
It's not a good year for Bridge Street restaurants. Oysterhead Tavern, formerly the Black Duck Cafe, has closed for the time being. Co-owner Al Barber says he and his partner Sarah Evans are continuing to operate the Black Duck Bakery next door, which offers grocery items, baked goods, coffee, and takeout meals. But Barber says the couple doesn't have any plans for the cafe space next door.
Plans are kind of useless at this point. We're operating in here. We've been operating for 10 years, various cafe, bistro, bar type operations. But we've come to the point now where we just can't hire anyone. There's just such a unbelievable labor shortage that, this time last year, I think we had 18 employees. Now we're down to one. And usually we expect a bit of a turnover in our industry, like, you know, every 6 months or so you get like a turnover, but of employees leaving. Maybe they're going back to school. Maybe they're going in a different direction with their career. So that continues to happen, but we don't get any new hires. We have no resumes. So we've been looking to hire various positions in the kitchen, bakery, front of house, and there's just no one's interested in working in this industry.
Barber says he and Evans have reached a point where they can mostly run the Black Duck Bakery on their own as more of a mom-and-pop shop, as opposed to the bustling cafe they once ran. The cafe space does not fit into that scale of operation, however.
So this will be here. It'll be mothballed. We might do something with it for fun in the future, but as for the time being, it's just going to sit here, unfortunately.
In addition to issues finding people to work in the cafe and tavern businesses, Barber says there have been other problems compounding each other.
We're in what economist Adam Tooze refers to as a polycrisis, where there's multiple economic crises taking place all at once that feed back on each other. So we have COVID, the ongoing pandemic, we have a labor crisis, and we have inflationary problems, and those things are all snowballing. And, you know, we've also got a supply crisis. So like a couple of weeks ago, we ran out of organic flour. We just couldn't get it anywhere. Finally, we found some, but like these things are happening all the time. So there are multiple problems in the industry and in most industries, but in our industry I can talk to, there are multiple problems, and there doesn't appear, there are also all the problems, or most of the problems, are beyond our control. We could maybe fix one of them, but we can't fix all four of them.
Barber says the whole industry is hurting, and he put in a plug for ramping up support for local businesses as soon as possible.
If you're, you know, a Sackville citizen and you have a restaurant or a small business that you like, now's the time to support it. You just have to support it now. Like things are so, margins are so thin, and most people are just scraping by, that like putting something off for a week or 2 weeks, you may not see that restaurant again. You should support it, or small business, like as much as you can every day.
And that's all for us at Viewpoints. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks to our reporters, Sarah Gouda, Erica Butler, Greg Osoba, Ed Halverson, and David Moses, National Coordinator Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada in Ottawa. In Montreal, I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. Catch up with all our news online at canada-info.ca. See you next week.